I'm going to do today is illustrate some examples of geographic information system tools in population-based epidemiological research. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues, Dr. Catherine Cubbin, Naomi Kawakami, and Dr. Marilyn Winkleby. What is a geographic information system? Basically, a computer-based system. That was quick. Yeah, that's right. Okay. A computer-based system of hardware, software, and data used to create, manage, store, display, and analyze spatial and attribute data. Its power is in showing relations and data with maps, especially showing layers of information together. Now, what the data I'll be using today comes from a study on cardiovascular health in four California cities. The main point I'm going to make is we geocoded the home addresses of our participants. Now, what I mean by geocoding is finding the geographic coordinates, like latitude and longitude, so you can map the address. So we then linked that to census data to describe the neighborhood social environment, such as poverty level, concentration. And also, we geocoded addresses of goods and services to describe the neighborhood physical environment, such as finding out where the local alcohol outlets are.
Sorry about this, I believe we're having some technical difficulties this morning with the slides.
Okay. So what I wanted to today is just show some simple, straightforward examples of using geographic information systems. For example, what I like to show is an urban-rural comparison of neighborhood boundaries, geographic representation of study participants, inclusion-exclusion criteria, calculating density distance variables, change over time in neighborhoods, and lastly, disseminating findings. Now, so first of all, to start off, how do you define your neighborhood boundaries? GIS is very valuable in checking, displaying, and in showing your boundaries. So, now, zip codes are very convenient. They're much more readily available than addresses. They don't need any further processing. You need to geocode the addresses. So you can use zip codes to describe your neighborhood boundaries, and then you can link them to your neighborhoods to the information in census zip code areas. Now, one potential problem is that your postal service zip code boundaries do not necessarily correspond well with the Census Bureau zip code boundaries. So here's an example showing an urban area in one of our study sites. So the dark shows the Postal Service zip code boundaries, and then the lighter shows the U.S. Census Bureau zip code area boundaries. And so they correspond pretty well. And then a rural comparison here, again a rural area in one of our sites, there's a lot of disagreement. So this is a potential source of bias. Now, how about showing where your study participants are? So this shows the residential locations of women in our study by neighborhood level poverty concentration. So you can see that the light shaded areas show the low tertile of poverty level, and up to the darker shade, which shows the highest tertile. Now, you note that we have, you can read it, in the lowest poverty tertile, we have about 95 or 42% of our came from that in those areas, whereas only 50 came from the moderate level of poverty. So we would ideally would love to get a third from each level. And so this shows you a little bit of the distribution. Now, you could, in a similar way, you can show a representation of your screened, your recruited, and also retained participants. And if you do it early on, you can also modify your recruitment strategy.
Questions at the end, please.
Okay.
Thank you. Sir, can you please wait till the end of the presentation and then we will take questions? Thank you.
Next, we showed some data on selected assets, goods and services such as grocery stores, social organizations, and health plans. And so we felt important to include all data on goods and services that are close to the exterior neighborhood boundaries, because we feel that residents who live close to those boundaries will still have easy access to those assets. So what we chose to use is a half-mile buffer zone. A half-mile represents like a 10-minute walk. So you can see on the upper left-hand corner, those assets are included. They're within the half-mile buffer. And for example, on the upper right, those fall outside the buffer, so we'll not count those. So this gives me to sort of get an idea of where local goods and services are for our neighborhood studies. Okay. Now we did look at a variety of ways to consider density or distance-based measures. So this example, the individual level, this shows that participant in the middle of a half-mile buffer zone, we're counting all the alcohol outlets around that participant. So we can get a total count, and also you can standardize this in terms of total population or area. Get a density measure. Now, correspondingly, I'll show you an example at the neighborhood level. Now we have the X's mark all the participants, and then the dots show you all the alcohol outlets in that neighborhood. So again, all the participants in this neighborhood get the same value, and you can again standardize by in terms of population area, so you get a density of the neighborhood. How about distance? Now, we calculate also distance to nearest goods and services, such as we want to find the nearest alcohol outlet to a participant. So this is an example of just calculating a so-called street network distance. You can contrast this with showing a straight line distance. But we prefer using a straight network distance. We generally recommend that. It's a little harder to compute, but it reflects more normal travel patterns. Show an example of showing changes over time. So this shows a distribution of fast food outlets in Modesto by percent Hispanic concentration. So you note that the very light shading shows all the neighborhoods with less than 10% Hispanic concentration, and up to the darker areas with over 20%. So note that most of the outlets tend to be in the areas with lower Hispanic concentration. There are only two fast food outlets in the areas with the higher Hispanic concentration. So let's advance, take a look at 1990. So overall, we have an increase in the total number of fast food outlets, and also an increase in the number of neighborhoods with higher Hispanic concentration. And now you see that there are 20 outlets in the middle area, so they're in the moderate Hispanic concentration. So it's just some decreasing trends there. Lastly, let's advance another 10 years. Now we see a great increase in the number of areas with higher Hispanic concentrations, and also an overall increase in the number of fast food outlets, and also that the we see the most exposure to fast food outlets come to those areas show an example of disseminating results using a web-based application. So here is a one could be prompted to enter their zip code so they could find information on physical activity resources in their area. You can provide a lot of links to different resources. For example, you can find information about a local park, a map showing a location. You can monitor the site to see what kind of activity is found on the site. You can maybe include a little user survey and that kind of feedback to help you improve your site and also give you some ideas for further research. So that's pretty much some simple, really simple ways to use geographic information systems and how useful they are in research and health environments. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Dr. An. I cannot apologize enough for the technical difficulties we are having. It appears our system is overloaded, so it will just take a little bit of patience. You have enough time to take us some of the questions.
Yes. I was just showing an example using zip codes. We tend to use census tracts in our studies. So we do have, and we got very good coverage as far as getting the home addresses of our participants. So then we could find, and we did find it. And so we did, we were able to geocode practically 100% of them in finding the home addresses. And then, yes, well, we found that most of them in the California cities we were studying, they were fairly stable over time in that time period. These date back, the data we're using date back to between 1980 and 1990. So basically our study was sort of an update. We had the survey data, and then we just combined it with looking at neighborhoods. So that was our next step in research. But at that time, the people were fairly stable in their residences. Question back. Well, we did. We primarily focused on using census tracts, and with the cities we were cooperating with, we pretty much talked with the people in the city, saying, "Well, give us some feedback. What you would describe as a common neighborhood in your area?" So we did define them in consultation with the local cities. That example is just showing a stratification by poverty level. So as far as, let's say, just an example showing a stratification variable you want to use. So just to track your recruitment by such variables. So that's the value we want to show that. Just showing by stratification. Yes? Yes. There's a California Alcohol Beverage Agency. We use phone books, for example. City departments of Parks and Rec to find the information about parks and things like that. So yeah, we use a variety of sources to get that. Yes. We use ArcView software for our GIS. And then generally there will be, in census tracts, there will be a range of different poverty levels. So we try to group them into for example, intertile, so you can express them in terms of, well, yeah.
I mean, there's so much geographical area. But when you get into
we primarily relied on census tracts, and then the census tracts themselves could vary in size. So some of them, because they were fairly sparse, they would be fairly large in size. So we primarily try to use census tracts for their number of population in them. So there was a great variety in the size of census tracts. Next question back here. To the cities and to get some advice as far as how large it would be an appropriate neighborhood, and we used primarily census tract boundaries to define them. Now they could change a little bit over time as well. So what we did was we modified the boundaries so that they remained constant over time. There were to a large extent very few changes in census tract boundaries over time. Distance measures, we like to probably use straight network, so-called straight network distance. Now, the idea of a buffer was just simply how much to extend beyond the outside boundaries, so that if a certain resident would have access to some outlet or store, so we just roughly said, well, how about a half mile, which is like a 10-minute walk. So we just did roughly as far as defining it as a buffer. So that's all we did. No, we thought, well, how far you can walk, and let's say in 10 minutes would be a reasonable kind of buffer. Okay?
Thank you very much, Dr. Harms. That's all the time we have for questions today.